let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Touch your mind. Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Theater Rhinoceros has been around for so long, and they're always putting on shows that people want to see. They've always got fabulous actors and actresses who bring the shows to life. Here to talk about one of the shows that she's about to bring to life, I'd like to welcome Margaret Holscher. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. So you're in a production of Pericles?
Yes, so with Theater Rhinoceros, we're doing Pericles, Prince of Tyre. It's going to be this upcoming weekend, so I'm really excited. We're ramping up the last week of rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be May 26th at 6 p.m. is one show, and then May 27th at 1 p.m. So there's only two shows that we're preparing for at Yerba Buena Gardens.
Oh, okay. Okay. So tell me a little, for our listening audience, what is the story of Pericles?
So it starts off with Prince Pericles guessing a king's terrible secret, and the king is upset by that, and so he sends an assassin after him.
Mm.
And him, Pericles, fleeing the city starts him on a wild adventure. It's full of a lot of ups and downs. There are shipwrecks, sword fights, marriages, births, deaths, all of it. We got it all. Until finally he returns back to the point where he hopes all wrongs will be righted again and all of his ills will be fixed. So it's a wild ride.
Very cool. And you play?
I'm playing Marina as it's kind of the more named or title role that I'm playing, but I also play a few other characters, and everyone in the show basically plays, I would say, a minimum of four characters each.
Wow.
I think there's 50 or so characters throughout the entire cast,
uh-huh.
So we're switching every few minutes. There's people switching to different, completely different types of characters, so...
Now, how do you, as an actor, differentiate your characters from one another since you're playing so many roles?
I would say the way that I do that is honestly just taking a single kind of breath or beat between each character, because mm-hmm. in some situations I have to just go from immediately being one character, like a fisherman, to mm-hmm. the next scene will be, you know, a knight in a jousting match. So just taking that second, even through the quick costume change and all of that, to just take one breath and to just kind of recalibrate mentally is just all we have time for, basically.
Right.
I can't spend too much time, you know, getting into character and, you know, sitting with my character. I just have to switch very quickly.
That's amazing. So tell me, this play Pericles, where does it come from? I mean, I know it's a Greek it's Greek myths, but who wrote this particular iteration?
So this is Shakespeare's Pericles. They say there's some rumors and there's some also influences from some other playwrights who worked with him on this, but Shakespeare has all of the credit for it in most people's eyes. And it takes place around the Mediterranean Sea. And it's the idea is that we're traveling around all of these islands and all of these shores along the Mediterranean to follow Pericles in his adventure.
Okay, so given that you're playing so many different roles and given that the language of Shakespeare is challenging, how did you approach it? Did you already have a background in doing Shakespearean plays, or do you have any tricks for wrapping yourself around the characters and the way it is spoken?
Yeah, I think Shakespeare is so intimidating to people sometimes because of the language.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I try to take that head on. I have experience from other Shakespeare productions. I was just in Twelfth Night last year with Berkeley Shakespeare Company. Twelfth Night. And then I've done The Tempest, A Midsummer Night's Dream, Julius Caesar, classic ones in the past. And the way I approach it is the way that I think a lot of audience members could approach it as well, which is first kind of reading the synopsis. There can be spoilers and stuff like that when you read that, but I think it's worth it to understand what's really going on. And so reading it before, then seeing a production, and then I would recommend even seeing it again. So, if you want to come to both shows this weekend to get all of those little tidbits that you missed before, because the first watch is just kind of getting the general ideas, but once you start really understanding what the actors are saying and what you're saying, at least from my perspective as an actor, there's so much richness once you can wrap your head around it.
So how long have you been acting?
I've been acting in musicals and things like that since I was 5. Was when I did my first.
What was the first one?
And stuff like that.
What was the first one?
Beauty and the Beast.
Aww.
So I was a mop, which was.
I would love to see that on a resume, role mop. That I think that's great. So did your parents?
Yeah, they braided my hair in cornrows and tied little mop pieces to the end, and I would twirl around, and that was that.
Did you love it?
I really loved acting ever since I was, that age. That's why they put me on the stage. Like, she needs to do something because she's always trying to sing and perform. So I did that. Then I went from acting more into playwriting. So I was doing that for a while and a little bit of directing in college. But then I found my way back to acting and Shakespeare specifically. So
that's
what I love the most.
It sounds like there's just been no wavering in your love of the theater, whether you're, writing it or being in it.
Yeah, I really love every aspect of it. And I mean, I like film acting and stuff like that too, but there's something about the magic of the theater that it almost feels like in a sports game, there's, people rooting against each other, rooting against the other team. There can be positive and negative emotions, but in theater, it's like you're watching something live that you want to go well for everyone. You want everyone to succeed and to impress you and to amaze you and to connect with them. And I think that's an energy that we need more of in life.
That's true, because when I go see things, you are rooting for all of the actors to do well, because you want it to be a good show. It's not like you're going there hoping that they'll fail.
Yeah, exactly.
So, did your folks support you all the way through with the theater, or did they just go, "Well, honey, maybe you want to have a backup"?
Yeah, they definitely supported me. My mom especially is just my number one fan, but she's always everything you do is so good. So she kind of pushes me into trying things, even when I. As I said, kind of went back into playwriting and was kind of discouraged about acting, but she and some other people have always pushed me to challenge myself and to keep trying and to push myself into the into the skills and into the scenarios that I really want to be in.
Well, shout out to Mom. Yay. So,
yeah.
So getting back to Pericles, tell me about some of the other actors in the play. And I know you can't tell me who they play since there's 50 characters and I don't know how many actors.
Right. Well, most of the actors have at least one kind of title role.
Oh, okay.
There's Sam Hattersley. He's Pericles, so kind of keeps that role throughout.
Okay.
That'll be my dad in the play, who is, we get separated and long lost, but, you know, maybe there will be some sort of reunion.
Uh-huh.
We'll find each other across the Mediterranean. There's John Fisher, who is directing, but he's also playing many of the kind of father figures, the father kings, all of that. And yeah, there's also Sarah Catherine Chan, Michael DeMartini. Just list all of these in case you know some of these people. But Crystal Liu, Flannery Mays. Flannery's going to be playing an assassin that chases Pericles, so that's pretty fun. Then we have Patty Shojai, who's kind of the narrator who will help guide us around the park to the different locations. And the show is very mobile, so we'll be moving around a lot, sitting down, standing up, interacting with the audience.
Okay, and it's not at your location at the Theater Rhino on 18th. It's actually at Yerba Buena Gardens.
Yes, it'll be at Yerba Buena Gardens. We're going to meet at the stone stage, so it's right next to this big kind of waterfall structure, and it'll be at the stone stage. We'll start there, and then we'll go all around the gardens into places that aren't even, you know, they aren't even stages. It's just a little, an area where suddenly we're there, and it's suddenly a place to perform, or, you know, standing on a bridge and we're in a shipwreck and all this stuff. So it'll be a fun going all around the place.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, if people, once more for our listening audience, what time for it and where do they get tickets?
So the shows will be May 26th at 6 p.m. and May 27th at 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two shows only in Yerba Buena Gardens, as I was just mentioning. The tickets, you can get them on therhino.org. That's therhino.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is completely free, so
Yay. You
can just also show up if you want, and
okay.
Or if you just happen to be in the park that day and you see us, you can join the audience at any time.
Very nice.
We anticipate to have a few of those, at least, you know, even during rehearsals, people will come in and say, what is this? And they'll watch us a little bit, and
uh-huh.
So that's always fun.
Very cool. That's for the people who want to kick off their memorial festivities a little early. They can go out and see you. And then what's next on your agenda after you do this?
What's next on my agenda? I hope to continue with Shakespeare and
uh-huh.
do more Shakespeare. I just love it, especially the tragedies. I hope to next be in a tragedy of some sort. So that's kind of what I'm going for. And then,
do you have
just continuing to learn and grow.
Do you have a favorite Shakespeare play? Maybe one, you know, that, because my favorite's Macbeth, but that's because they have the witches. What's your favorite?
Right. Yeah. I love the witches there. I don't have a specific favorite. I really like any tragedies. I mean, I love Romeo and Juliet. I know that's kind of cliche and everyone is sick of it from learning about it in, you know, school or whatever, but I love it. I also love just any one where there's a really evil, manipulative character. Those
mm-hmm.
are always fun to play for me. And Pericles, my character, is so, like, innocent and sweet, and he's a young maiden, so I would be excited to play something more gritty and, you know, not, I mean, it's rare that a character is ever completely evil with no other motivation, but right. at least having that kind of sinister energy, or that they're always up to something. I like the idea of scheming a little bit. So,
so within the Shakespeare, oeuvre, which character fills that bill for you?
For me, I mean, Brutus and Cassius from Julius Caesar planning to overthrow him. Also, King Lear, the sisters, the two daughters that he has are just...
Yes.
They just want to overtake him.
Right, so, right, right.
Those would be probably my top choices.
Excellent, excellent. Well, if people want to find out more about what you're doing and, you know, keep, you know, just keep an eye on your career, how would they go about doing that?
I don't have a website or anything like that. I'm just on Instagram. If you look up my name, Lipstick and Stars is my Instagram handle right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I post on there, repost about the shows I'm in and things like that. So if there's anything like that. Also, I'm mostly just involved with African American Shakespeare Company as well, and Berkeley Shakespeare nice. Company. So I'll probably hopefully keep associating with those two companies. And if you see any shows there, maybe I'll be involved.
Okay. Well, Margaret Holscher, I want to thank you and your mom so much for being on the show, doing Shakespeare, and just making the world that much more enjoyable through theater.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, come see us May 26th, 6 p.m., May 27th, 1 p.m. It'll be your only two chances.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Go check it out. Pericles at Yerba Buena Gardens. It's going to be fun. You can just wander up and enjoy a good time. You know who else enjoys a good time? Bjork.
Slamming against those rocks, and when it lands. be closed or open. I go through all this before you anger, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this before you anger, so I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this.
That was Dr. Bizarre's original Savannah Band and Hard Times from Dr. Bizarre's original Savannah Band. Before that, we heard Bjork and Hyper Ballad from Post. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there is a digital gap here in San Francisco, and the mayor's office would like to close that digital gap. So from the San Francisco Mayor's Office on Housing and Community Development, I'd like to welcome Ray Lachaud. Hi.
Hello, hello, hello.
How's it going?
It's going swell and well. I'm happy to be here.
So first of all, tell me a little bit about the Mayor's Office on Housing and Community Development. Like, how long has it been around, and what's the mission?
Well, there's a lot of different transformation points the mayor's office has, been a part of, and, departments coming in, departments kind of, going to other departments. But it's been a while for quite some time. I've been there for about 2 years now.
Oh, okay.
As digital equity manager, just came on my, up on my second year in this month. Uh-huh. So, hooray. I was actually on a meeting this morning with my management team, and I could just sense how deeply committed everyone is to making sure that our community-based organizations are fine, our residents are fine, mm-hmm. they have what they need to be successful, right? Especially post-COVID, or are we even post-COVID just yet, right?
Yeah, you know, pretend post-COVID.
Right. So our priority is the city and its residents. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is a digital equity manager?
Wow. That encompasses a number of things. So from a digital perspective, essentially what I do is I make sure that all of our what we consider marginalized or vulnerable, underserved communities especially, mm-hmm. Get what they need to be successful, right? Every San Franciscan should have what they need to be successful, and that creates a thriving environment for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really sum it up to, and folks will hear me say this, this is my kind of spiel, so to speak, is a three-legged stool, right, that we abide by when we look through the lens of digital equity.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually added a fourth leg, mm-hmm. But I'll get into that a little bit later. I talk about the cornerstone of digital equity is making sure folks have high quality internet connection.
Okay.
Right. That's the highway.
Okay.
Right. Next, once that's firmly in place, once the highway is, no speed bumps, no potholes,
mm-hmm.
right? We want to make sure that they get a nice car, right? The cars are up to the standards and the specs of today.
Okay.
Right. High quality devices. And then we segue to high quality digital literacy training. That's the driver's education.
Okay.
Right. You got to know what you're doing on the net. It's okay. So many ways to be vulnerable. So many ways you can compromise your privacy. And yeah, we want to make sure San Franciscans are safe. We've heard horror stories about cybersecurity breaches.
Mm.
And I was telling you about a bonus leg, and that's high quality IT help desk support.
Okay.
Right. Once your car breaks down or your car needs to be serviced, you need to know where to go. And that, one of the things that we pride ourselves in is having a good relationship with community-based organizations that do the work the best, right? Trusted messengers in community.
Okay. The reason you guys got on my radar is because I saw that you guys were part of Tech Week at the San Francisco Public Library, and you were doing things with getting people, low-income people, to be able to have access to the internet, which at the time struck me because I met a woman who had a printer but couldn't afford ink.
Yes.
And it was like that kind of person would have to make a choice between whether to have the internet that day or whether to have a printer that month. So tell us a little bit about some of the programs you have for people who could use the help.
Absolutely. And you bring up a tremendously important point, DJ Marilyn. That was actually one of the points that came up in terms of like, why aren't folks connected to internet? And it's affordability,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the things you pointed out, the fact that we were there. So special shout out to Kay Epler and Maureen Singleton and Jason Blandon and their team for helping us kind of working together rather to bridge the digital divide and amplify this subsidy that's offered by the federal government, and it's called the Affordable Connectivity Plan.
Okay, tell us more about it.
So yeah, absolutely. You're eligible for this subsidy based on a number of factors.
Okay,
right. You can be if you're receiving Medi-Cal, right? SNAP, CalFresh, federal. If you're in federal public housing, affordable housing.
Uh-huh.
If you're a veteran or survivor's pension, WIC recipient. If you get SSI, you get free or reduced lunch program,
okay.
Federal Pell Grant, and if you're eligible for the Lifeline program. Or lastly, and I don't really tout this often because, in San Francisco, the cost of living is so high that this last factor, a lot of our folks don't qualify for. But if you do, it's if you're at 200% of the federal poverty guideline.
Okay.
And
what's the federal poverty guideline?
Yeah, so
currently?
That's right. So for a single individual, it would be roughly about 14,000 some odd.
Okay.
Right? And then if you say 200%, that's roughly about a little under $30,000.
Okay.
Right. And a lot of San Franciscans make $100,000 in the household and they're still struggling.
Right. But there are people who are, living
close to the bone. And I've talked about this with my colleagues across different departments at the city, and that was one of their concerns, right? How do we get folks who are above that threshold, still looking to survive, still pointing to affordability as the barrier to get an internet connection? How do we figure that out? And so that's when we did this research, this advanced policy analysis that was done actually through the Civic Bridge program, or Academic Bridge rather program, with the Office of Civic Innovation. And we were able to partner with a fellow there named Heidi Wallace.
Okay.
Special shout out to Heidi. She developed this. She interviewed ISPs. Okay. Internet service providers.
Thank you.
Right. So no jargon. She interviewed local community-based organizations, individuals, folks who are signing people up for ACP, and she was really trying to understand, like, what are the barriers to uptake, we call barriers.
Okay.
And largely what we found out was there were a number of things. So there was informational barriers, right? Like the mistaken belief that the folks are ineligible for the program.
Okay.
Right? Or information not presented in the person's first language, right? Or their heritage language, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Or we wanted to make sure that we removed, when we launched this campaign, Connect San Francisco, we wanted to make sure we removed the logistical barriers. Like, because in order to participate in this program, of course, you have to submit some required documentation.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually changed a little bit. They've streamlined it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, it's still a barrier.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Skills needed to navigate forms and documents. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of older adults. And I know a lot of older adult superstars that can navigate the internet smoothly a lot better than I can.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still, like, I grew up in an age where, dial up. Right. AOL, Netscape. I'm dating myself. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot has changed since then.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks from the younger generation, it's like second nature to them. They can do it literally with their eyes closed.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to be sensitive to the folks who can't do it as well. And so my mantra, or my motto, is make no assumptions about where folks are in terms of their digital literacy skills. No assumptions.
Well, you've got a lot right there. So let's talk about the barrier. So let's say you're disabled.
Yes.
What are some of the things you have in place to make it easier for someone with a disability to overcome the logistical barriers to signing up for the program? And also, while we're there, how does one sign up for the program if they have heard that they are eligible?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. Really, number one, I would say identify a community-based organization in close proximity to you. I can name drop here CTN, Community Technology Network. Mm-hmm. Also, the SF Tech Council have already ran in-person sign-up sessions that you can go to in community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just depends, again, where your digital literacy skills are. But if you would rather, you know, someone kind of facilitate you through the process,
mm-hmm.
You can also go to our digital equity website, MoCD website. Just search, you know, SF Digital Equity and you'll find it. Making no assumptions about where folks are and mm-hmm. their skill level. But if you can Google it, great. What you talked about, like in terms of what is the city doing in terms of connecting with folks or making sure accessibility is mm-hmm. a focus.
Mm-hmm. Like if you have mobility issues.
Right.
You know, it's hard to get to a place.
Absolutely. And most of our CBOs are ADA compliant. So if that part, but I know that's not the only disability, you know, mobility or what, mm-hmm. or whatnot. But just I would say from a standardization perspective, the city, special shout out to the Committee on Information Technology, Jillian Johnson, and our Digital Services Department, Sid, they've actually developed a digital accessibility and inclusion standard okay. for the way that we present our content on the website.
And what is that?
So that's a standard by which any language. So, for instance, any language that's presented on the website,
mm-hmm.
If it's considered essential, right, essential information,
okay,
it's in plain language,
okay.
right? It's at a fifth or somewhere around a fifth grade reading education level.
Okay.
So someone who is limited English proficient, they can understand it, right? Or someone who may not have, you know, a rich education background for whatever reason, they might have just immigrated or whatever the case may be,
mm-hmm.
They can access that essential information. And on top of that, we provide this content in multiple language, four of the most spoken languages in San Francisco. Because as you know, this city is a big melting pot,
yes.
rich with culture.
Yes. So English, Spanish, Chinese.
Yes. Filipino.
Filipino. Okay.
Right.
All right. So, and what I'm going to ask you several times, what is that website for people who are listening right now to sign up?
So you can go to getacp.org.
Okay.
And really why I like this, and this is a partnership between, or I said collaboration between MoCD and Education Superhighway. They've availed these amazing tools, co-branded tools, where you can, if you want to promote the program, they have collateral material. You can print it. You can send a digital version. They also have this amazing tool where you're able to certify yourself as an ACP sign-up navigator, right?
Ooh, what's
and
that?
It's like this asynchronous
asynchronous.
So it's not reliant on time, place, and space.
Okay.
Right? You can go lockstep, listen to a video. In good sequence, there's activities to kind of test your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, you get a certification.
Okay.
And so you get that good housekeeping stamp of approval.
Okay.
Right? You're able to get out there and spread the good news about the ACP. And not only that, sign folks up. Because mm-hmm. I know the topic of ACP often comes up, but a lot of CBOs, community-based organizations.
Okay.
I'm just using it for short. Because I know I'm limited on time, but I want folks to get what they need.
We've got plenty of time.
No, thank you. They have what they need to impact the community in a positive way and share the news of this program. Because right now we're at like 27% adoption of eligible households, which means we have a ton of maneuvering room for growth.
Okay.
So we want to make sure we extend that reach to your mom, your cousin, your sister, your auntie. You know, tell them about the program, and they can go to our website or go to getacp.org and sign up. And going back to the tools that they use, one of the things that make them unique, or this portal unique, that's why we decided to leverage it,
mm-hmm.
is that it makes like your process, not only is it available, like the language to sign up is available in multiple language, five or plus languages.
Mm-hmm.
It's like streamlined. It's like you're on rails when you're going through the process. And then a lot of times, like the other portals that I was, you know, we were kind of analyzing, and we're really trying to make sure that we're sensitive to that, right, that accessibility factor, like,
uh-huh.
you know, that digital literacy factor. we wanted to make sure that once a person signs up or once a person is looking at their eligibility and they figure out that they are eligible, that they understand that. I know it's kind of touted as like you get your internet for free. No, it's not exactly free. You have a $30 a month subsidy. So if your package is $30, then sure, it offsets that total cost.
Okay. Okay.
But if it's $60, because you might need that bandwidth, you might need that, you know, the higher megabits per second, right, connection speed, you might want to up it. It just depends on your needs. And so I want to point back to is this tool allows you to, once you kind of figure all the eligibility stuff out, you go to this page, you find the carriers in your specific area, because as you know, all carriers aren't created equal in every area.
Sure, sure, sure.
So it tells you which carriers are have been reviewed as, you know, the highest satisfactory ratings.
Okay.
And so you know, you're able to figure that out and what package, you know, how much the package is really going to cost.
Okay.
And so that was one of the things, because the other tools that we reviewed, they had, okay, you go step one, you put in your information, step two, determine eligibility, step three, you choose a carrier. Well, it was like a list, an alphabetized list of carriers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, you know, you weren't even familiar with them. You didn't hear about them until, you know, that moment in time.
Right.
So we're really serious. And I'm one of three. Special shout out to Twan Fan and Nelson Ramos, who actually lead our Fiber to Housing program. I really want to talk about that because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Okay.
Which is a partnership between MoCD and the Department of Technology. Now, the Department of Technology, they literally have a dedicated team of technical professionals who get out there and bring fiber to affordable housing sites.
Oh, okay.
Right. They go out. They do an assessment. They're actually expanding this fiber ring. I'm getting educated on this right now. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of surface level stuff, but I really kind of relinquish like the responsibility of explaining the technical aspect to DT, Department of Technology.
Okay.
Because they do such a good job. But they have a dedicated team that goes out, assesses the site. There's an equity standard that, you know, the site must meet. Is it 90% affordable housing, at least 90%?
Okay.
Right. Who does it serve? Is it older adults? Is it veterans? Is it folks who have been historically marginalized?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that factors into the equity piece. And then a lot of times what we look at is how many units are in the building, right? Because we have a number of competing priorities, right? And we want to prioritize where the impact is going to maximize, right? And then two is, since we're building out a fiber ring, you know, is it adjacent to the fiber ring that we're building out? Because, you know, I won't go into the technical details, but it requires that the process of propagating and spreading fiber, especially for a city, you know, I know it's 7x7, but it's very densely populated.
Right.
And we have a lot of folks who have been impacted by COVID, and that was, you know, poverty has been exacerbated by COVID. So we want to be sensitive to that. And then what we do at MoCD, once the fiber is connected, we come in and we educate the community about the program. Again, the residents, because ideally the number one solution we like to provide is in-unit Ethernet connection, because a lot of folks don't know that. They think internet connection is internet connection. And so, you know, open Wi-Fi, that's a decent solution.
Mm-hmm.
But Linda Gurrell, Brian Roberts, and you know, their team, Henry Bartley, they like for us to prioritize in-unit connection. Our camp, our MoCD, Brian Chu, in-unit connection, because that's the fastest, one of the fastest speeds that you can enjoy.
Okay.
And when we talk about digital divide, I mean, imagine a young person coming home, you know, maybe they don't, you know, their income level isn't as high as, you know, other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having to endure, you know, the weight of poverty, and then the weight of having to do their homework on a connection that's significantly slower than their counterparts at school.
Right. So with the Ethernet connection, do you provide like the boxes and the
that's a great question. So yes, the routers. So that these are city sponsored routers. DT, Department of Technology, sponsors these routers.
Okay.
And they go out to the residents.
Okay.
Each unit.
All right. Now, we've talked about people being able to sign up for the subsidy for having internet. You also mentioned that you wanted to talk about the housing component. And in addition to that, are there any other programs that you want to make sure people know about that they can sign up for?
Absolutely. Really, I just really want to point folks to our website. Just search SF Digital Equity. We will come up. Don't select the sponsored section if folks are Google savvy. Look at the result that's city specific. You bring that. I like the fact that you bring that up because we have one program that's getting a makeover, the next iteration, and we're doing interviews, community interviews, and business professional interviews, and that's the Digital Skills and Entrepreneurship Playbook.
Okay, what's
and
that?
Really, what that really go so it's really designed to support businesses who are struggling to transition into the digital realm.
Okay,
I mean, imagine if you're a business and you've been thriving in San Francisco for so long, and you were, you know, brick and mortar, relying on time, place, and space to generate income. And then now COVID kicks in, and then only 25% of the folks that walked in before are walking in.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
You would have to make a quick pivot shift to, you know, e-commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Eat24 or some of these other online where you order your food and someone comes and delivers it to you. Well, it takes a level of proficiency to get that set up for a business. And sometimes they have that capacity, sometimes they don't. So existing business owners, aspiring business owners, to help streamline the process in coordination with our Office of Small Business, to make it easy to sign up for a business, to make it easy for you to register your DBA or fictitious business name or incorporate it, or understanding accounting or understanding AP, you know, these systems that allow for, you know, the different components of your business to talk to each other. How to manage your review, because reviews are so important now, because if somebody wants to eat or is looking for a place to eat, they're going to immediately look at the reviews. Nine times out of 10, they're going to look at that. How do you manage that? If you get a one-off person who says something that may or may not be true, how do you manage that?
Got it.
Right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks who might have excellent establishments and excellent businesses, you know, they don't do that because they don't recognize the importance, number one, or they just don't know how.
Okay. So in our last few minutes, I want to make sure that people, for people who don't yet have a computer but are planning to get a computer, or like, where can they, are there places they can walk in and say and get help signing up for the programs? And if so, can you give those locations so that people know where they are?
Well, that's an excellent question. So I have a number of, so I can cite the CBOs, the community-based organizations.
Thank you.
That I serve, or not that I serve, that actually serve me, or our office, who are grantees, because they have a number of locations across San Francisco. But what I will say is, if you're looking for a good resource to remove any essential, like, you know, barriers that you're experiencing, food, transportation, housing, go to the SF Service Guide.
And what's the
So SF? Shelter Tech is the steward, the creator of the SF Service Guide.
Okay.
And so what it is you can go there, they have these big tiles, and the tiles might say, you know, financial assistance, long-term housing, jobs, if you need a job, rental assistance or eviction prevention.
And where would we find those tiles?
Oh, they're on the website. So you type in SF Service Guide.
Oh, okay.
SF Service Guide. I believe, yeah, sfserviceguide.org.
Okay.
Or Google it or Bing it. I'm not trying to, I'm vendor neutral. Okay. And you, when you get there, you click on the tiles, it's going to ask you a series of questions to kind of whittle down or curate a list of relevant resources. And not only that, when you look to the left, there's this geographic information systems component where it's essentially like Google Maps. It shows you like where you are in proximity to these resources.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. All and right. and it, we're actually working together on an internet devices and digital literacy tile. So if folks are looking for that, are looking for those resources, they can go to the website and get those things.
Okay.
But I will shout out to Chinatown CDC, Community Tech Network, Five Keys Charter School, SF Goodwill, Parents for Public Schools, PRC, Dev Mission, Shelter Tech, who I just talked about, the YMCA in Bayview. These are all grantees, Centers of Equity and Success, also known as Success Centers, Petrero Neighborhood House. Like, all of these agencies are grantees of ours, and they provide a number of different services. And you can go to our website and you can find that information.
And the website again for our listening audience?
I'm sorry, I don't remember by heart. Please forgive me.
But can they go to getacp.org to find out those things?
So for the ACP, yes.
Okay.
But if you Google or Bing SF Digital Equity, please look at the San Francisco, City of San Francisco specific site result.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll take you there.
All right. And then for if organizations, community organizations, individuals want to find out more about their eligibility, do they also go to getacp.org?
You got it. That's
okay.
It.
And if people want to find out the full range of programs that the Mayor's Office on Housing and Community Development are offering, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so if you're looking for the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, I would just go to the sf.gov
okay.
extension.
All right.
So yes, so that's what I would do. I'm sorry, we just had a transition. We're transitioning all of our sites to sfgov.org.
Excellent. Well, Ray LaShow, I want to thank you so much for being
thank you.
On the show today. And you have 1 minute to either give a shout out or you know, what's the thing you want the takeaway? What's the takeaway?
Again, make no assumption about where a person's digital literacy skills are, right? I think we make those assumptions often, but I think checking in with the person and making sure that they have what they need, again, to be successful is so important. And this valuable lesson I've learned doing community work,
mm-hmm.
and I just think it's commonly overlooked. And I just, as a city, and this is what I'm learning from my colleagues and from my CBOs, is lead first with empathy, and understanding.
Wow. With that, once again, Ray LaShow, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
People of Earth, if you have needs, they will help you. So visit getacp.org. You will probably qualify because there are a lot of things. If you want to listen to this interview again, you can go to our Spinatron link and listen to it, or you can visit the archive on our program guide for Let Me Touch Your Mind, and you'll be able to listen to it again. It's just about time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. It'll be pleasure in your ear hole. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo. Oh, yeah.